This morning is 21-1917, Polaris Innovation versus Advanced Micro Devices. How do I say your name, counsel?
Freitas.
Mr. Freitas, please proceed.
May it please the court. The principal issue on Polaris's appeal involves the construction of the claim term checksum, which under the 526 patent is a type of check information. And under the proper construction of that term, the combination of the Liu and Iglesia references on which the board relied does not render the claim 9 unpatentable. But there's another issue that does not depend strictly on the resolution of that base claim construction issue. That issue involves the claim 9 limitation requiring that the processor be configured to determine the checksum based on the data bits and the first and second indicators. Much of the information on which Polaris relies and its position for the claim construction and its position on the based on limitation is agreed or was determined by the board to be correct and isn't challenged by AMD. So the foundation for Polaris's argument is the teaching of the 526 patent on the differences among the various types of check information. That's where we begin. All appear to agree that check information is the broadest category and that there are subcategories of check information.
So checksum's not the same as error correction codes.
It's not, Your Honor.
It's broader.
I'm not sure whether it's broader. It's clearly different because the claim language distinguishes between the two, that all of the subcategories are distinct. And by the way, along the way in its analysis, the board pointed out that the applicant used his own lexicography in designing the claims in this patent. So we don't have an overriding term of art, and we don't have a clear, comprehensive definition in extrinsic evidence. But there is some useful information in the extrinsic record, which all appear to agree is useful. In the Microsoft Computer Dictionary definition of checksum, the definition...
I'm a little confused if you're arguing that the patentee acted as their own lexicographer while you're immediately jumping to extrinsic information. Usually when we're looking at coin terms of the patentee, we look at the patent and its specification because that's where you would find them defining their own terms.
Your Honor, the reason why I'm turning to that is because I'm going to point to one specific aspect of the extrinsic record that is agreed. And that's why. And by the way, Your Honor, the point that was made by the board about the lexicography, the point was that the Microsoft Dictionary defines the term in a manner that excludes error correction. But under this patent, it's quite clear that error correction is included. So that was the reason.
What do you mean error correction is included in checksum?
In check information. Mm-hmm. So a checksum mm-hmm. can include error correction or error detection. But the point that was made.
But it's not limited to error correction.
It's not limited to error correction, nor is it limited to error detection, which the Microsoft definition suggests. But
I didn't understand the district court's construction to limit it to anything. I understood the dispute to be here that you didn't want the construction to include simple parity bits, but the district court's construction included the ECC bits, parity bits, all different kinds of bits that could be part of the checksum.
What Polaris specifically argued, Chief Judge Moore, is that the definition doesn't include bits that are calculated using non-overlapping inputs. That was the specific point. But the other argument
Where in the specification does it say checksum doesn't include bits using non-overlapping methods?
It doesn't say that in those words, Judge Hughes.
But your argument was lexicography, right?
That's right, Judge Prost. What the patent shows, the patent uses the terms in a certain way. Equation 14 and other examples show only calculation using the overlapping inputs. And that's what we rely on, Judge Hughes. We don't have a distinct statement. What we have is a consistent use of the patent.
I don't understand. You responded to Judge Hughes's comment or question about whether or not a checksum includes error-correcting bits, and you said what? You said it doesn't, or it's not the same as, but it includes them, right? It includes error-correcting
so
bits.
So what we have to say on that, Your Honor, is based on the claim language. So we have check information.
Yes or no? Does a checksum include error-correcting bits as one of what could be a type of bit within the checksum?
Check information includes error-correcting bits.
Okay, so checksum, what does checksum include?
A checksum can include error-correcting bits, as Claim 5 shows. Each checksum comprising error-correcting bits.
Right, so if Claim 5 says a checksum includes error-correcting bits, why doesn't that end your argument on the claim construction?
It doesn't end our argument because that doesn't resolve the question of whether they're calculated using overlapping, non-overlapping bits. That issue is not resolved by that. But,
I'm really confused by that statement. Is error correction always using overlapping bits, or can it use non-overlapping bits?
Error correction can use non-overlapping bits.
Well, so if checksum can include error correction bits, which I think you just said, and error correction bits can be non-overlapping, then why doesn't checksum include non-overlapping, not bits, but bits produced by a non-overlapping method?
Our argument, Your Honor, is based on the way the embodiments are consistently described in the patent. There's nothing
that shows
that. So
you're asking us to rely on the embodiments rather than the claim language.
On the consistent embodiments. That's right, Your Honor. Yes,
we never do that. We've always said the claims aren't limited to their embodiments. If there's specific claim language, absent some other indication in the patent, that it's confined to those embodiments.
So, Your Honor,
where's the language that said this patent only includes examples covered by these embodiments? I'm pretty sure it's not there, because you never say that.
It's not there, Your Honor. You're right. So let me turn to...
Then how are we going to rely on the embodiments? Isn't that contrary to our basic principles of claim construction when you have general claim language that, as you just said, it could include error correction bits that could include non-overlapping methods? You have to have a clear disclaimer or some other argument for why the specification excludes that.
Mm-hmm. I understand what Your Honor is saying, and obviously you're correct when you describe how things are generally done. So I'd like to turn to the other argument about the based on limitation. This is the one that we argued, the board said, wasn't contested, but it was. And AMD attempted to answer that in a way that isn't consistent with the patent. Now we go back to the basics. Check information has various subcategories. One of them is a parity bit. But we know that a parity bit is not a checksum because the claims distinguish between checksums and parity bits.
No, because a parity bit can be part of what creates a checksum. I mean, a parity bit is just a non-overlapping thing. You already said checksum can include error-correcting bits, which include non-overlapping bits, and that's what a simple parity bit is. So, boom. I mean, you're right. They're not the same thing. A parity bit is a subset of what could be making up a checksum.
Well, it could make up a checksum, but we know that definitionally a parity bit is not a checksum because the claims distinguish between parity bits and checksums. I don't think that's disputed.
They don't distinguish between them as though they're different items. They distinguish between them as though they're not you know, completely overlapping Venn diagrams, but a parity bit can be a bit within a checksum.
Can be a bit within a checksum, but is not a checksum. So a single parity bit is not a checksum. The argument then becomes for AMD that when you have multiple parity bits, even though a single parity bit is not a checksum, the multiple bits become a checksum. And AMD argues that that is so because multiple parity bits can be used to calculate a value. This is where that aspect of the Microsoft Dictionary comes in. A checksum is a calculated value. So AMD says when you have multiple parity bits, each individual bit not being a checksum, it is possible to calculate a value from the set. But what AMD cites to try to address the based on argument doesn't involve a value calculated from the set of parity bits. They're distinct bits. They are not used to calculate a value.
What about claim 8?
Pardon me?
What about claim 8? Claim 8. I think it directly refutes your proposed exclusion. Checksum C is calculated by taking the component-wise modulo two sum of two inputs, a first checksum and a second checksum, and each component is a parity bit calculated from disjointed inputs. So why doesn't claim 8 directly refute what you're saying right now?
Well, I don't think it does, Your Honor, because those are checksums that are in claim 8. But it certainly doesn't address the argument I'm making on the based on limitation.
But each component of C is a parity bit. That's all it is.
In that case, Your Honor, where you have a value that's calculated from multiple parity bits, you have something that's different from what AMD is arguing to address the based on limitation. They're not showing multiple parity bits being used to calculate a value. They're showing multiple independent parity bits. If the court has no more questions, I'd like to reserve the balance of my time.
Of course. Okay. Counsel, how do I pronounce your name?
Ashish Kapadia.
Kapadia. Mr. Kapadia, please proceed.
Can you just clarify for me what you're appealing that you didn't win on? Let's just assume we don't think you have standing to cross-appeal claims you won on. You can argue for alternative grounds of affirmance, but you don't have standing. What's left that you're appealing that you didn't win on?
That would include claims 10, 11, 13, and 10, 11, and 13, which depend from, I believe, claim 1.
And that all depends on the combination of Iglesia and Siddhara. I'm not saying that last one right, but
yeah,
that's what we have to look to.
That's correct. Those two references, Your Honor.
And that doesn't even extend to the second ground of Iglesia, Siddhara, and Uya. I don't see 10, 11, and 13. In that.
Yeah, that is correct. So for the second ground that adds Uya, that would be claims 2, 3, 5, 14, 15, 17, 21, and 22.
Wait, so you're cross-appealing those too, though, aren't you?
That is correct.
Okay, so it's not just 10, 11, and 13.
That's right.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'd like to start by talking about the appeal briefly. With regards to the construction of the term checksum, and the invalidity of Claim 9. For the term checksum, the board properly rejected Polaris's attempt to read in a negative limitation into the claims, and they did so relying on four pieces of evidence: the intrinsic record, the dictionary definition that Polaris's expert cited to, AMD's expert, which provided context for that dictionary definition, and Polaris's own position in district court, in which that dictionary definition supported their position that checksum simply meant a calculated value that is used to test data for the presence of errors. There was no mention of checksum excluding multiple parity bits or multiple parity bits that are formed in a particular manner, for example, calculated from disjointed sets of inputs. So taken together, the board properly rejected it and had substantial evidence to support that, and Polaris hasn't shown that the board did not have substantial evidence to support its construction. It's also important to note that Polaris, before the board, indicated to the board that it is not a case of disavowal. So this is left either with a case of lexicography, which the intrinsic record does not support, or a situation in which the term is consistently used, which again is not supported. I'll point to Judge Moore's question with regards to Claim 8. Claim 8 of the patent and the associated disclosure does show that a checksum can be calculated using a modulo 2 operation, the very same operation that's used to calculate multiple parity bits. And that operation for Claim 8 and the associated disclosure has two inputs that are not overlapping. So it specifically goes to the type of language that is in Polaris's negative limitation. In fact, there, if you were to adopt their construction, I believe Claim 8 would be read out of the patent. On that issue, under the board's proper construction of the term checksum, the board properly found that Claim 9 is invalid. There are no further questions on the appeal. I'd like to turn to the cross-appeal. Now, the board...
Let me see if I... Because I'm a little confused about what you're arguing. Let me make sure I understand it. Are you challenging both the substantial evidence on motivation, no motivation to combine... the two, Iglesias with Sudhara, that way? Or are you not challenging that anymore? And all you're saying is the board failed to look at it the other way, starting with Sahara and then going to Iglesias.
It's the latter, Your Honor. The board did not address the second combination, starting with Sridhara and a motivation to combine that with Iglesias. We are not appealing the first combination that is starting with Iglesias. The petition had two combinations in it. The first...
Well, you're right about that, but tell me what I'm missing, because the petition at 87 through 89 talks about these combinations, and as I'm reading it, you've got one paragraph on the first, second paragraph on the second, and then the three paragraphs, which are the meat of your argument, seem to be only with respect to the first and not the second.
That is correct, Your Honor. The subsequent paragraphs deal with the first combination. The second combination that starts with Sridhara...
Which is one... consists of your argument, or your petition at least, consists of one paragraph.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so what was the board... How much was the board supposed to do in terms of addressing that issue?
The board was required to address the combination as found in the original petition for that ground. Under SAS and subsequent federal cases, federal circuit cases like Vicor, it is clear that the board must address all grounds, and that includes all combinations that relate to those grounds in order to satisfy.
But addressing the grounds means that the board explicates what the basis upon which it's reaching its decision. And if you effectively in the petition didn't make a fulsome argument or an argument that was comprehensible, what is the obligation of the board to address it consist of? To just say one sentence and we reject this too? Is that what was missing in the board's decision?
No, Your Honor. What the board needed to do was address the combination meaningfully. For example,
as meaningfully as you addressed it in your petition or more so?
At least as meaningfully as it is addressed in the petition. And the combination here, I'd note, is a very simple one because it takes Iglesias' framework, its unified framework, and implements that using known hardware that's found in using Sridhara's framework and implements it in Iglesias' hardware. Now, both of these deal with the same concepts of error correction and data bus inversion.
Where did you set forth any kind of distinct motivation to combine that began with Sridhara rather than Iglesias?
So, Your Honor, that combination is found in the second paragraph.
Am I right? We're looking at the argument starting on page 377 of the appendix.
377? Aren't we on?
I have 87.
No, 87, Your Honor.
Oh, I'm looking at the... Are they in different places?
Petition. We're on the petition.
Well, I don't know what this is. Well, it doesn't matter. I think they're the same.
So on...
This is...
I think you're in a brief.
I'm in the brief. I think it's similar, but in any event, we're on page 87.
On page 87 of the joint appendix.
Okay. Sorry for interrupting.
No, that's okay. Where is it that you set forth a distinct motivation if a person of skill in the art began with Srihara rather than Iglesia?
So in the second sentence of the ultimate paragraph on page 87, it states, to the extent that Sridhara does not explicitly disclose a system with a processor and circuits, a person of skill in the art would have been motivated to look for ways to implement.
That's saying a person of skill in the art would have looked for a way to do something. That's not a motivation to combine. That's not a specific argument. What is the motivation here? Tell me, what is the motivation to make the combination that you've articulated? Is it, efficiency? Is it there's a problem with the original reference? That concept is conclusory. That is not a specific motivation.
So the first reference, Sridhara, Your Honor.
No, I don't want you to sit here and try to create a motivation now. The problem I have is you didn't argue a separate motivation if you start with the one reference and go to the other. The only motivation you argued was with regard to the combination going the other direction, and the board fully addressed that. So if you didn't separately include a motivation that is distinct, if you were to start with Srihara and then go to Iglesia, then the board has already addressed in its entirety your ground because it rejected the only motivation you proffered with regard to combining these two references.
If there is no motivation to combine, I agree the board doesn't need to address it. As in, if there is no combination effectively in the petition, then the board doesn't need to address it.
They already addressed the motivation to combine these two references, did they not, in the board's decision?
They only addressed the motivation to combine starting with Iglesia. They did not address the
motivation to combine Iglesia and Srihara was already rejected. The motivation you proffered was rejected by the board as not sufficiently proven, correct?
I would respectfully disagree that that's the only motivation.
What it is actually, well, first of all, that's you're trying to basically, after the fact, invent a new ground for invalidity when the heading talks about Iglesia in view of Sridhara. Anyways, I mean, even if we allowed that, I mean, the board doesn't have to hunt and search for every single little possible combination you may be raising. They get to address what you raise. And what you raised is Iglesian view of Sridhara, and you explain why you would have used Sridhara's stuff to fill out whatever. But where do you explain you would start with Sridhara and use other things in Iglesia, and that's how somebody, a person of skill, would use that? Where does it say that here?
So in this paragraph, Your Honor, it states, I'll go to the last sentence on page 87 of the joint appendix, that because Sridhara only discloses a framework, so it may be important here to distinguish what a framework is from actual hardware. A framework is simply just a concept. So it's a research paper. Sridhara is a research paper. It doesn't actually disclose a system, actual hardware. In order to implement that system, to effectuate the teachings of Sridhara, you would need to look for systems that are in the art. That's what's described here. And the last sentence says, that would have led someone of skill to Iglesia. And why? It's because Iglesia describes a system architecture for performing the very functions that Sridhara's framework is designed to implement. And so that motivation is a simple one of providing that hardware. Now, in the petition, it repeatedly refers to Iglesia's hardware. For example, for the preamble, to the extent it's limiting, Iglesia's hardware is pointed to for the overall system. And further, within Claim 1, there is a circuit that transmits information. That circuit in the petition specifically refers to the circuit that is disclosed in Iglesia. So what we have here is a motivation to combine and a framework for the first reference, Sridhara, and a way to implement that using the hardware for the second reference, Iglesia, and that is repeatedly referred to throughout the petition. Now, had the board considered this combination, the board would have found a motivation to combine. It's a simple combination, as I mentioned earlier.
Okay, just out of curiosity, what is a ground?
A ground, Your Honor, includes the legal basis for the challenge, the references that are part of that and the combinations thereof, as well as the claims that are challenged.
I think I may be wrong, but I thought I remembered you responding to Judge Prost's initial question by suggesting we raised two grounds in the petition, Iglesia in view of Srihara and Srihara in view of Iglesia. Those are two separate grounds, correct? Because you're arguing two separate, according to you, there are separate motivation to combine. The motivation to combine is not the same for all of them. So would that be two separate grounds?
That's one ground within the petition, Your Honor. They're both captioned under ground one, but they're two separate combinations using the same set of references.
How can that be one ground? If you're telling me that there are different considerations that go into each of them, how could you put them under a single ground?
A ground does not specifically delineate one direction, if you will, of a combination from another, but rather includes the references and the invalidity theories as an obviousness under Section 103.
So is what you're saying, your ground is you would have been motivated to combine these two references, and you could combine them both ways.
That is correct, Judge.
So you're not saying that the board didn't address one of your grounds. You're saying that we had several theories that we threw out there with respect to what would justify the ground raised, and the board was required to give a detailed explanation of those theories, even though they're essentially listed in your petition as saying whether you start from one or the other, you would have been motivated to combine.
I would say that to the extent theories includes combinations and the way in which the combination is cabined in motivation combined, yes.
I mean, they go through, maybe they didn't address this second argument to your liking, but they start out their analysis in that section that they agree with the patent owner that you haven't shown that there's a motivation to combine these two teachings. They don't limit it to Iglesias over Siddhara. They say no motivation to combine these two teachings. Why isn't that enough?
Because the board is required to reach
all grounds, but you just said these aren't separate grounds. The ground is Iglesias and Siddhara, and the board considered that combination. They gave fairly detailed explanations why they were rejecting it.
The board is required under this court's decision in Donner Technologies to meaningfully address both the arguments and the evidence that's put forth in the petition. In this case, the board did not address that combination.
That's just because we have to be sure that the board has looked at your arguments. It's clear they looked at your arguments, though. You know, we don't grade their opinions for their thoroughness. It's just is it sufficient to review under the APA for their conclusion?
I see that my time is up. May I answer your question?
Sure. Quickly.
The board is required to meaningfully address the arguments. If the board is simply just addressing the ground as a whole, when it comes to a combination, that is insufficient in order to meet the requirements under the APA, and that's consistent with this court's cases. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Freitas, some rebuttal time.
I'd like to address my rebuttal argument to the distinct argument that's made on beginning on page 29 of our brief regarding the based on limitation. My friend mentioned Claim 8 and said that it answers various things, but it doesn't answer this issue. Under Claim 11, the check information must be a parity bit. Under other claims, the check information must be a checksum. So those are different things. Everyone agrees that a single parity bit is not a checksum.
Well, they can be distinct concepts, but that doesn't answer the question of whether or not a checksum can include a parity bit, right?
It doesn't answer that question, okay. Judge Prost. However, a single parity bit is not a checksum. A checksum can include a parity bit. Now, the problem that exists and the problem that we argue beginning on page 29 of our brief is that if given that a single parity bit isn't a checksum, to make multiple parity bits a checksum, one has to demonstrate a calculated value associated with the multiple bits. If they're simply standing by themselves and no value is calculated from them, they don't amount to a checksum. And that's the point that AMD hasn't addressed. AMD argues, and the board appears to have decided, that simply transitioning from a single bit to multiple bits transforms the non-checksum single bit into a checksum. Now, that theoretically that could happen, and the arguments that are being made explain how multiple parity bits could comprise a checksum. But in the example that on which AMD relies, the individual parity bits are individual parity bits. They are not being used to calculate a value. And that's the point that they haven't answered and that the board didn't address. The board did not address Polaris's argument regarding the based on limitation, as we explained beginning on page 29 of our brief. And the issue hasn't been decided. AMD's attempt to show that what Polaris has to say is incorrect failed. And that's where we are on that issue. And by the way, this is a slightly different point, but
make it quick, you're out of time.
Okay. Dr. Zhirbilsky pointed out that separate checksums remain separate checksums. We submit there's no basis for distinguishing parity bits on that score.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kratos did not address the cross appeal, so that concludes all of the argument in this case. This case is taken under submission.